Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready.
Ready.
Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception, Reception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Goh, Matt Harmon here with you. Matt Harmon here with you as you are listening to Reception, Perception, the show. Welcome back to the United States of America, pal.
Yes, officially, I am still on vacation. You know, I'm going to be out next week too.
I know.
However, I got a thought on that when we come back to it in just a moment. But yes, okay. I am currently in the United States of America after a great trip to Portugal, a little bit of Spain too. But my God, I enjoyed the hell out of myself. Beautiful. I'm sad about a couple of things, James. Yeah. You know, typically you're sad about the vacation being over. You're always sad, of course, you know, the post-vacation blues. And like I said, mm-hmm. I'm not really technically done with the vacation. However, from a European standpoint, I am done. I will say, the two things I'm most sad about is that I have now officially, well, actually three things. I have now had to break up with three items. One, bread. I have to break up with bread coming back to America. Two, fruit. Okay.
Fruit
and three espresso after basically every meal. I mean, my God, these Europeans, they know how to live. Okay. All right. The bread, unbelievable bread before every meal, espresso at the end of it.
Okay.
And it's just different, you know, look it up. You guys could do the deep dive on why things are different in Europe as opposed to America. You guys go ahead and do that. I'm not going to give you the full spiel of it here on this show, but it's just better. The fruit tastes better. The bread was better and the espresso after every meal. Life-changing. So,
but we're giving up fruit?
Well, we're not giving up fruit, but I had a really depressing thought at one point during one of the many fantastic breakfasts I had there. Yeah. I'm eating a watermelon and I just thought about like, oh my God, I'm going to have to eat a watermelon, you know, from like freaking Harris Teeter, you know, here in when I'm home, and just the thought of what that watermelon's going to taste like versus what the watermelon I was having in Portugal was tasting like in that moment, that was very depressing. So I am not, obviously I'm not going to eat fruit, but I enjoyed the fruit so much more there that it's going to be a reacclimation, you know, and I'm not going to never eat bread again, but I'm not going to eat bread nearly at the quantity nor quality that I was eating in Portugal. So
incredible. All right, good stuff. You were gone for what? 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. And then you're back for a day.
For a day.
And you're going to be back for another week.
I'm gone again. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I'll be gone again. And I have to say this too. I don't feel like I missed much while I was gone. We're going to talk a little bit about basically like one thing that I missed in the NFL world while I was gone, which I believe it was the one thing I tweeted about while I was abroad.
Correct.
Yeah. I think I'm going to take June off every
year.
You know,
every year?
Every year. I mean, my God. Every time I would pop open my Twitter machine, which was not very often, I did have some pretty good social media discipline.
Good.
I'm like, this is what you guys are talking about right now? Who cares? I mean, like, I don't think OTAs matter anymore. I don't think mini camps matter anymore. Of course, I still ascribe to the drumbeat theory, which is that you want to see like a we used to talk about this a lot on the NFL shows. Yeah. Where it's like you want to see the, and shout out to my guys, Sigmund Bloom, Cecil Lamb, used to talk about this bag of football guys. You want to see that like consistent drumbeat throughout the course of the offseason. Like one headline in OTAs or mini camp, doesn't matter. But you want to see that then build into training camp and build into the preseason. This doesn't track as much anymore because teams don't really play in the they don't take the preseason very seriously anymore if they ever did at all. But you still want to see that like consistent drumbeat throughout the course of the offseason for anything. So like tracking these data points and logging them does matter. But like one individual headline in June and people, you know, freaking out about, who cares? Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. So I might just disappear for 2 to 3 weeks every June going forward. We'll see. Wow. Probably won't, but we'll see. I'm thinking about it.
I mean, you might as well. I might, pal.
Thank you. And I'm still, you know, listen, we're still going to have a year 4 wide receiver drop next Monday. Yeah. Not this current Monday, but next Monday. So there's still going to be some charting, you know, taking place over these few weeks. But in terms of like hopping onto the podcast sphere and talking about this latest, you know, Titans head coach Robert Saleh is not worried about Cam Ward's inaccuracy from me. I don't care. Who cares?
Wow. Just put an absolute, just squashing down these beat reporter reports in OTAs, which is, you know,
Squashing down people doing their jobs or you know, other folks doing a great job grinding, you know, these reports and everything.
Yeah.
Not for me. Okay. Yes, I don't care.
It's not for you. Okay. That's fair. What have you missed since you have been gone? A treasure trove of content. I don't know. Maybe it's not treasure trove. Anyways, Jalen Coker was the one and only thing that our guy Matt Harmon tweeted about. Jalen Coker got an extension, man.
Yeah, he did. Extension from the Carolina Panthers, 3 years, just over $30 million. Yeah, obviously the valuation, it's a total value of $35 million on the three-year deal. This is like getting Jalen Coker for that per year number is a great bargain for the Carolina Panthers, of course. But it is a reminder that when you're an undrafted free agent, you really are banged, you know, to get peak value. And this is a good job on the Panthers rewarding this player who has so clearly outkicked their expectations for what he was. He was an undrafted free agent in the same draft class of a Xavier Legette first round pick, the 2024 NFL draft, which, woof, that one's not going to go down very well. I did see a headline on Xavier Legette that him and Bryce Young have what was the exact term that was used that they have, quote, like in next level discussions with Xavier Legette in the offseason Bryce Young is having. I don't know what that means because Jalen Coker is getting contract extension discussions, which great for Jalen Coker. You know, it's a reminder that these UDFAs are banged because he was an exclusive rights free agent this year, which means nothing. Then he would have been like a restricted free. It's just a long time till they actually can get to the market and really cash in. So good on the Panthers rewarding this guy now and not having him play on like, you know, peanuts when he's essentially going to start for them as their wide receiver too. And I think this like locks that in, cements that he is their wide receiver too. It's obviously not Legette. Chris Brazel is probably competing with Legette to be the wide receiver 3, but Coker's wide receiver 2 on this team. And we know at Reception Perception that he's good. Like he is a guy that really played extremely well as a rookie. And then he got banged up to start this past season. But when he was active and you know, healthy at the end of the year, he was excellent, including having the best moment for any Panthers receiver in the wild card game against the Rams. You know, Tedrone McMillan told me in February that game plan was all set up for Jalen Coker to dominate the Rams in that
game.
That's
crazy.
And it's crazy for a second year undrafted free agent. And so obviously he gets the extension, which was great. I got that news headline. I mean, it was, you know, time difference there in Portugal. I was not sober during that. So that was very exciting for me to raise a glass to Jalen Coker getting that deal. Good for him. And good for the brand as well, if we can be honest here on the Coker thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Speaking of the brand, quarterback profiles have hit the site. Last year's rookies are all over the website right now. Alfredo Brown, our quarterback charter, has been grinding that tape, man. He has written some profiles here. You've got Cam Ward. You've got Jackson Dart. You've got Shador Sanders. Man, there's so many things. Man, there's just so many profiles that you can go through. Tyler Shuck is on there. J.J. McCarthy is on there. 5 quarterback profiles of last year's rookies, and it's a really fascinating read. He is extraordinarily high on Cam Ward, thinks he's going to be one of the most improved players in this upcoming season. So he's with you. He's not buying into any of these OTA reports. Jackson Dart, he was surprised by how bad he was. J.J. McCarthy was cataclysmically bad. Right. Shedeur Sanders is not good either. And he was really hyped and excited, I think, about Tyler Shuck as well. So that's just kind of sort of the general outlook on some of these quarterbacks. But go through and read the profiles, because I tell you what, there's a lot of great data in there. Tons of great information that you guys should go be reading right now. But Matt, in your stead, we had another Matt jump on. Matt Beauvais jumped on to talk about the Bills. The team seems pretty determined to get Keon Coleman on the field, and the addition of DJ Moore will allow that versatility that we have been talking about for ages now to get Keon moving around the football field. But it does sound like the Bills are pretty determined to get him on the football field. What's your reaction to that?
I think it makes complete sense. I don't think Coleman's a guy that should be completely given up on. I also think obviously counting on him to be a starter would be a massive mistake, which they're not doing. They brought in DJ Moore. They have Khalil Shakir established in his role. But the problem with Khalil Shakir's role is that, as we know, it's a very singular one where he is not going to be asked to do too much outside of that context, which I think is fine. I think basically if you look at his charting profile, Khalil Shakir over the course of RP, but especially in the most recent season, which was 2024, like, yeah, he's a guy that wins in that specific area, but you don't want to stretch him out too far from that. So
right.
Your third receiver does have to essentially be like a Z type who can move around. And I think that Coleman, it would serve him well to be an off-ball receiver who isn't just asked to run the vertical route tree. I think also, though, he's going to still handle some X receiver stuff if he's the guy, because you don't want Moore to just be a DJ Moore to be just that static X receiver as well. Yeah. Skylar Bell's also an interesting name to bring up here too, because I think he fits best as a speed Z receiver. Off ball, move him around, get some slot reps and everything there. So yeah, no, definitely I think that they should be moving these guys around. I think they will move these guys around. But of course, I would just say like this, and this is why I think that June can be a little bit of an eye rolling time. Mm-hmm. I remember when Keon Coleman was a rookie and like Bill's some, and I'm not taking a shot at these reporters, but like I had several people, Bills reporters, Bills blogs, be like, hey, they're lining Keon Coleman up all over the place. Like, you know, tagging me in big slot stuff for Keon Coleman from camp. And yeah. We got into the regular season and all they did was run him out at X receiver. Yeah. So, I do think it makes some sense to still hold, you know, keep the light on for Keon Coleman, of course, but you just can't count on him to be a starter. Really, I think, honestly, James, Coleman's biggest impediment has been himself. Like, I don't think he is so bad that he's somebody you can't play, but they couldn't play him because he wasn't showing up to meetings. So, like, yeah. I think that's totally fine if he's your third receiver, but he just needs to take things seriously. So that's really the biggest thing, and we won't know that really until the lights come on.
Yeah, and Matt Beauvais talked about that too, that he just needs to have more accountability, and the fact that Matt had talked about Keon understanding that. And, you know, when camp was rolling around last year, Beauvais really pointed out that Keon looked great. He looked really, really good. And for whatever reason, when the regular season came around, we just got a different mentality from Keon Coleman, and that, you know, he pointed to the fact that the mentality of Keon Coleman once the regular season rolled around was completely different, and the beat reporters were surprised by that. So can Keon, as you mentioned, get out of his own way, stay focused in on the game, and contribute on the field? We'll see. I mean, I think Keon understands that this is what's happening, but I don't know. We'll again, it's a long way to go. So we shall find out. In San Francisco, we talked to Tim Kawakami, who talked San Francisco 49ers, and we talked a little bit about age and fragility of the team. I mean, you're thinking about how dependent this team is on Trent Williams, who's going to be 38 years old. George Kittle's obviously older and coming off an Achilles. Christian McCaffrey is that dreaded 30-year-old running back right now. And then again, we talked about some of the fragility surrounding Ricky Pearsall as well, where this guy just seemingly cannot stay on the football field. I want to put a pin in that one. Mm-hmm. I want to put a pin in that one because you have a Ricky Pearsall profile that I want to get a deep dive into here. But again, the San Francisco 49ers, what I said, Matt, was if you were to play this team on Madden with injuries turned off, I think they're still a pretty darn good football team. Unfortunately, we got to play in the real world, man.
Yeah, we got to play in the real world, and that's a little bit more difficult. Yeah, I think if everything goes right, the Niners have an extremely high ceiling, right? Where I think they could be one of the best teams in the NFL. You just have to, yeah, you just have to hope the injury gods are kind to you this year, which they were not. They were so, so unkind to them last year. And that's despite the fact that, you know, Christian McCaffrey was the guy who seemed to suck up all the good health energy last year. I honestly wonder if it might be the inverse this year. Just, you know, Christian obviously is coming off an absurd amount of touches, fourth most opportunities, targets, plus rush attempts for a running back since the year 2000. I love to keep throwing that stat out there. It just like that's an insane thing. So it would honestly be like something of a miracle if he is able to. And we could also be honest too that a lot of Christian McCaffrey's statistical success last year did not come as a rusher. It came as a receiver.
Yep.
So that's another thing that's like also facing this offense too, is just, is their run game going to be as dynamic as, you know, you could kind of set your watch by. So I agree with you. Yes, it's a very fragile build. If it all comes together though, particularly in the receiving room, you know, it's pretty exciting. I don't think that you can, I honestly don't know that you can learn almost anything about a wide receiver in OTAs and mini camps and stuff like that. You know, especially when you're like watching and observing these guys, like they're not wearing pads. They're running a bunch of routes on air. It just really doesn't matter. You know, even seeing some of the like receivers that were getting pop from OTAs and mini camps, even before I left the country, it was like oh yeah, it's the typical small shifty slot guys. Like, yeah, those are the guys that always, I shout out Chris Westling. He was the one who used to point this out, like the Paris Campbell, who I believe retired. So shout out to Paris Campbell.
Yes.
The Paris Campbell corollary. It's always those like small shifty guys that get a lot of excitement from OTAs. Cause it's either, and then I would say my add on to that theory from Chris is that it's also then in training camp and even sometimes in these mini camps too, the other receivers who tend to get a lot of pop are like the contested catch guys. Cause you don't even need to be a smart football, and there's a lot of smart football observers obviously who are beat writers and go into these camps and things, but you don't even need to be a smart football observer to be like, ooh, that contested catch looked pretty freaking cool, you know? So those are the guys that also get a lot of pop, like things that are very easy to see are typically those players. So my point in saying that is that like I don't know that what Dazon Stribling is going to be in the mix here. I don't know, but we'll figure that out probably when we get into training camp.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation, I think, in San Francisco, just again, because it's one of the oldest teams that you'll find. And the fragility of the team is just, it's scary. Although where there is smoke, there could be fire. There's a lot of talk of an arms race here between San Francisco and LA. Will San Francisco go make a move for Max Crosby? Ton of rumors surrounding Max Crosby potentially going to San Francisco. Could you imagine they get Max Crosby in the same dang division as Myles Garrett, bro? Oh my goodness gracious, that is crazy. By the way, I've been charting a lot of running backs, and for whatever reason, a lot of these last year's rookies, I charted a lot of Raiders defensive fronts against some of these rookies here. Mm-hmm. Max Crosby so god dang good against the run, it's absurd.
Yeah.
It is absurd. How good Max Crosby, he's getting double team. It doesn't matter. Slipping between tackles. Like, who cares? I'm just going to disrupt this in the backfield. Like, he's just absolutely blowing up holes. Max Crosby is so good. I knew about him, and everyone knows about him as a pass rusher, but in the run game, Max Crosby is an absolute dog. Like, it's ridiculous watching him play along that defensive line. It's amazing. And if the San Francisco 49ers get him, oh, man.
Yeah.
Shoot, could be crazy.
That division is insane either way. That division is insane regardless of whether that happens or not. Like, it's just, the team we haven't talked about, they just won the Super Bowl, you know, Seattle Seahawks, and a little game called the Super Bowl. They won that thing. So, yeah, and then there's the Cardinals as well, who I don't think they have they solved the contract impasse with Jacoby Brissett. I don't believe I missed that headline.
So
there's that. Yeah, but yeah, remember when Max Crosby was a Raider for 5 seconds? I mean, excuse me, a Raven for 5 seconds. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that feels like 100 years ago, man.
That was fun.
Baseball is back, and BetMGM, official partner of Major League Baseball, is bringing the heat all season long. Step up to the plate all season with Swing for the Fences, the free-to-play game where every swing could score you rewards. We're talking parlay boost tokens, odds boost tokens, same-game parlay boost, and even bonus spins all season long. And the action doesn't stop there. Get more out of every at-bat with MLB same-game parlay boost. Stack your picks and boost your potential payout. Plus, lock in bigger value with MLB Odds Boost tokens and MLB Parlay Boost tokens all season long. More boosts, more swings, more chances to win. Download the BetMGM app and step up to the plate today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus and present in Ohio. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards payback and unrestricted withdrawable funds. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
We also talked to Fantasy Docs, a.k.a. Dr. Nithin Natwa. He is worried about Malik Nabers. He is not worried about Rome Odunze. So, again, this kind of sort of, I think this is in line with what we've been talking about. I think this is in line with the general expectation of both players that Nabers probably not going to be himself this coming up year. Mm-hmm. Hopefully he will get back to himself, but this year's looking pretty problematic. And Rome talking about how his foot's just not going to be the same or whatever it might be. Dr. Natwa says not that worried about Rome.
Yeah, cool. That goes with my priors and the things I like to hear. So I'm going to take that as the truth in terms of the Rome Odunze thing there. How you consume injury information, by the way, in June is like, is this what you want to hear? Cool. Yeah, then I'm in on that. If you're somebody that's not in on Rome Odunze, you're playing that, this is my new normal, you're making the fear post out of that one. But yeah, no, for me, I would just say too about the Malik Nabers thing.
Yeah.
It's such a bummer because I don't think we talked about the Nabers profile before I went on vacation. I don't think we talked about it on the podcast. But God, dude, like even I know it's just four games, and I kind of also just man, he only played four games last year. I thought it was like six or something, but it was just a very brief moment for Nabers. And I'm very fascinated to see like what this year. I don't really care. Honestly, I don't really care how this year goes for Malik Nabers. And I think that's unfortunate because I'm with the doctor on that one. And that just the way this has played out so far, I would think it would be I'm just not expecting Malik Nabers to be himself this year. Period. If he is in December, and he's a January or whatever, and he's helping you win fantasy football titles, that's awesome. But I just don't know that you can count on that realistically with how this has gone. So I am fascinated to see like what the rest of the Giants receiver room looks like. But it's just really a bummer that this is happening right in this moment for Nabers, because there is so much of his profile that looks like he is ready to take that leap from what I would say like a tier two receiver in the NFL to a true maybe tier one receiver. Like, and we had this discussion, I think, on a recent show where is there like a tier one and a tier one and a half, is like, because Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson, I think those guys are clear tier one receivers. Is there like another group after that? Or are they also tier one? I'm talking about like a tier one receiver. No question about it. Like, this guy's one of the best in the game. That's how good his charting data was. Obviously, he was good as a prospect. He was really good as a rookie. But then this like data from this past season, number one, also made me kind of hate the Giants offense all over again. And just how that was designed.
Did you hate the Giants offense or did you just hate Russell Wilson?
Well, that's the fair retort there, because so much the first three games of the Giants last year were started by Russell Wilson, and it was just classic Russell Wilson stuff. I mean, Malik Nabers ran a go route on 26% of his charted routes.
Oh my God, that's absurd.
His second highest was the curl route at 16%, and that's just so Russell Wilson coded. I mean, his percentage of catches which occurred in space. Malik Nabers, as a rookie, I said, oh man, like they got to get this guy in space more. I think he's one of the best after catch receivers in the NFL, like period. They got to get him more of these chances. Let's get him in the slot more. Let's get him all these designer stuff. They actually did that less from a percentage standpoint in his second season because he's running all these static routes with Russell Wilson. So that's fair. But I still think it was kind of that way ish when Jackson Dart was in there. And I also think Jackson Dart is on the kind of Russell Wilson spectrum, of, the type of throws he likes. Jalen Hurts is this way. Justin Fields is like the worst version of this type of player too. So I do think Dart kind of fits into that bucket, but I also think this is like a day ball thing, which makes you really interested to see what the Titans offense looks like this year. But regardless, I get maybe hate the Giants kind of structure all over again. But even with this like very X kind of static role, I still thought Nabers was awesome. I mean, 98th percentile success rate versus press coverage. was excellent. He was so good from like a man coverage standpoint. He's very, very close to cracking 80% success rate versus zone, which he hasn't done just yet. But the first like two seasons of his career really map to me so similarly to Ja'Marr Chase. And if you look at his top two comps this past season in the player comparison tool, it's two Ja'Marr Chase seasons are in the top three. So wow. He's like of that level of talent. And Chase really took his game to the next level when he was able to move around the formation and get more opportunities in the slot, get more opportunities off ball. If you look at his historic data, that's exactly how that happened. And I actually think Malachi Fields could be kind of like a T. Higgins type of, like a poor man's version of a T. Higgins type of player, where he can take reps at X and allow Malik Nabers to move around. So other than the injury, like it's all set up for 2026 to be that type of year for Malik Nabers, where he goes from like a great tier two receiver to a true tier one guy, much like Ja'Marr Chase. And the profile really is glowing. It's just so hard to talk about because we have this injury variable hanging over our head.
You know, and if you're wondering why I've never put it on the podcast rundown, that's it. You know, yeah. It's a small profile. And then I know it looks great. I read through the whole dang thing. But it's just, okay, it's a shorter sample than we'd like. And then on top of that, it's like, how much of that is even going to matter? Because he's not going to be healthy.
I know.
Coming into 2026, you know? Yeah, there's a lot to go through there, man. I don't know. I'm curious to see how this is all going to play out in New York. Jackson Dart's profile is really interesting too. So I don't know. Like I said, Jackson Dart, according to Alfredo Brown, Jackson Dart had a lot of hesitation throwing to the intermediate middle of the field, where he saw it on numerous plays where guys were getting open, designed open, like actually good play design from Brian Daboll to get guys open in the breaking into the intermediate middle of the field. And Jackson Dart was just double pumping that thing, you know, you just got to let it rip. But he was a young player too at the same time. So we'll see where that goes and what it ends up looking like. Yeah.
Just share one really cool stat from the Nabers profile to, again, just drive the knife home in and how painful it is that he is having this sort of injury kind of situation right now. These are the following receivers who have hit or cleared 84%, which, as I mentioned, is a 98th percentile score. Success rate versus press coverage while taking 30% of their sample snaps in the slot in reception perception history.
All right.
A.J. Brown, Davante Adams, the aforementioned Ja'Marr Chase. Wow. Justin Jefferson did it three times. Odell Beckham did it three times. And now Malik Nabers in this kind of short 2025 sample. So that's what I'm saying. Like, that's truly elite company. Like that's kind of the, are you a non-slot based player and you're beating press coverage at an elite rate? Yeah, those are all the elite receivers in the game. Yep. Everybody, I think everybody in that cohort at their peak was a true elite. You're only going to argue this if you're a attention, you know, seeking bonehead online.
Yeah.
But these are all elite receivers. Nabers should be in that group. Unfortunately, I just don't know if it's going to happen in 26, and we'll see what he looks like in 27.
Okay, so we teased this Ricky Pearsall profile. If you guys haven't been to the website, receptionperception.com, go check it out. 71.6% success rate versus man. Bingo, that looks nice. 79% versus zone, that's pretty good. It's acceptable. Let me just put it to you that way. 77.3% against press, though. Ayo, that looks really, really good. And these are, I think, pretty good numbers considering they played him a ridiculous amount outside, 80% outside snap rate, according to Next Gen Stats for Ricky Pearsall. And I know your numbers found pretty much exactly the same.
Yeah, Pearsall's slot rate fell below 20% this past year in reception perception. His snaps went 7 to 79%. He was in the backfield more, you know, like as a motion guy, but still 55% snaps on the ball. And I think that's the number I want to focus on the most here. And some of this is because, you know, the Niners are always going to be rather too tight end heavy. They play with a fullback, Kyle Juszczyk. So there's not going to always be just like a true slot option. Still, though, I think what they wanted him to do as a rookie, where he was a 33% snap slot-based player, very much used in motion often, 52% snaps on the ball as opposed to 48% off of it. So they're always going to kind of blur the lines, I think, between some of these traditional positional designations with how much like heavy personnel they do play in San Francisco. But I just thought as a rookie, you saw like more of a crystallized version of what they wanted Ricky Pearsall to be, which is they want a true X receiver in place, you know, who can dictate coverages and win down the football field. That was supposed to be Brandon Ayuk. It was Brandon Ayuk for a stretch there in 2024. And they kind of had to shove Juwan Jennings into that role when Brandon Ayuk got hurt. And then obviously last year, I think they still wanted it to be Brandon Ayuk, but he just never came back to football last year. And, you know, dot, dot, dot. We all know the rest of that story. So they kind of had to like mishmash the X receiver role together last year. This is my pet theory, with a little bit of Juwan Jennings as an outside on ball receiver and Ricky Pearsall as kind of the vertical option. And I think that's the thing with it. If Pearsall's role is destined to change this year, it will be more snaps off the ball. It will be more work at the Z receiver spot, and he will run more higher percentage routes. I mean, if you look at his curl and slant route rate, they're both below 10%. That's insanity for a guy that I think is a really good route runner and can give you a lot of layups. And it's that just wasn't how he was used at all. His route tree is very, very downfield oriented last year, in addition to, I think, being an outside on ball receiver a little bit too often.
And again, I point to these numbers of 71.6% success rate versus man. It clears that 70% threshold, but just 79% against zone. And we figure Ricky Pearsall is going to be a great zone beater, but it's awfully tough to beat zone at that high of a rate when we're talking about the routes that you're talking about. Less than 10% route participation on the slant route is absolutely outrageous, even if you are playing outside X receiver or playing as a flanker receiver. It just, that is crazy to me. The routes that San Francisco asked him to run is shocking. You know, again, 80% lined up outside, but again, less than 10% on slants. That's crazy to me.
Right. And that's the thing too, is like the Shanahan X receiver, you're running a lot of those like slant routes, you know? And I think that was just and I'm not sitting here criticizing the San Francisco 49ers for what they had to do with Ricky Pearsall. Like I said, I think they were dealt a bit of a bad hand with the way everything went down with Ayuk and, you know, just the way the receiver room kind of came together last year. I think they were, because by the way, like Ricky Pearsall in this role when he was healthy was really good and really productive. I know you have to like cherry pick around, and maybe people can say that's what I'm doing here, is I'm cherry picking games where he was and was not healthy. But like, if you just look at the first 3 weeks of the season, he was third, and he was top three in the NFL in receiving yards. He gets hurt in week four. He comes back from the PCL injury. He has a three-game stretch where he doesn't do very much. But then once he got healthy again for a little bit, he had a few good games. Then he aggravates the PCL injury, and we just really kind of only saw him then again at the end of the season before he aggravated again. So it was just like a constant thing last year for Ricky Pearsall, but still he was a pretty productive player. I'm not saying this guy's going to be one of the best receivers in the NFL, but he's very like a useful, productive player, even beyond just his reception perception charting metrics. And I think that his route running showed up really well last year in this very downfield oriented role. And I do think he could give them a lot more layups going forward. But yeah, his three routes where he was above the NFL average from a percentage standpoint, like how often he ran them. Yeah. Dig routes, 26%, out routes, 12%, comeback at almost 7%. The only route that he didn't perform very well on was the comeback route, but still out routes, dig routes. He was making a ton of big plays on those routes. He was getting good separation on those routes. I think with like a few more tweaks to his game, he could really be one of the best route runners like in the NFL. There's more to being a great receiver than just running routes, of course. And there are some parts of Ricky Pearsall's game that are legitimately below average, and we'll talk about one of them in a second. Okay. But from a route running standpoint, yeah, he's one of the top like breakout candidates of this year. If he can just stay healthy, which obviously was a huge problem last year.
You mentioned 26% route participation on the dig route, which is a big number, man. That is a big number. That being said, he was borderline dominant on all these in-breaking routes. 78.5% success rate on the dig, which is really good. 83% on the curl, which is really good. 87% success rate on the slant, which I don't need to tell you. This guy's getting open 87% of the time. Come on, brother. That's That's nice. And then 78% on the post. Over 50% of his routes were on these four in-breaking routes. And again, that's part of the Shanahan route tree, but this is where you got to be dominant. And you know what, man? Ricky Pearsall was borderline dominant on all in-breaking routes. It's exactly the kind of production that you want to see.
Exactly. And that's obviously going to be the main diet of this 49ers offense is going to be those in-breaking throws. Brock Purdy's really good on those in-breaking throws. I think him and Pearsall have a good chemistry and connection on those in-breakers as well. I mean, I remember getting so gassed up seeing Brock Purdy throw with anticipation to Brandon Ayuk on those dig routes. And obviously, Ayuk had this monstrous 2023 season that I'm still going to be thinking about until I'm, you know, 6 feet into the dirt, how Brandon Ayuk was so good in 2023. Partly because Purdy was so good on those throws. And I do think that, man, like Pearsall and Purdy can develop that if they just get more time on task together. That's an important thing to remember, too. Like Mac Jones was the quarterback for a few of those games at the start of the season, the Cardinals game and the Saints game, when Ricky Pearsall was popping off at the beginning of the season. So like him and Purdy really haven't had a ton of time together. At least they didn't this past season, but they also had good moments together at the end of the season as well. So I just think there's so much good about Pearsall's game. I think he's really, he can definitely have a better success rate versus zone if he's used more in the open field as a off-ball receiver, a flanker, which he definitely will. I mean, Mike Evans, that's the thing. Him coming in here is such a big deal. Obviously, everything with the 49ers, if Mike Evans is going to be healthy and he's on the field, of course, we know that. But like his addition to this team, I think changes the way Pearsall is going to be deployed, because Mike Evans, obviously, when he was on the field last year, didn't show too many signs of decline, maybe some small this, that, and the other. But 87% of Mike Evans' snaps last season in reception perception was on ball. Second highest rate of his career. Like he's still that outside on ball receiver when he's healthy. Dazon Stribling, their second round rookie, 33rd overall, much talked about player. I think he can be used as like a big hefty slot option. I think he can be used off the ball as well, but he still was mostly an outside on ball receiver in his prospect profile. I think if Mike Evans goes down for a little bit, he'll play some X receiver. I think he's essentially Juwan Jennings' replacement, who's kind of that on ball power slot player. Like Pearsall off the ball, I think that this matters a lot for his projection and his deployment this year. So I think that should be pretty exciting for Pearsall, just getting some of these role tweaks that would really help him kind of be even more of like, I want to say like a consistent producer and not be so kind of high variance boom or bust, which he kind of was last year, even if you use some of the injury caveats, which I pointed out earlier.
Well, listen, if the guy's going to be running all these deep downfield routes, that again lends itself to being boom or bust.
Yes.
You know,
right.
He's got to get more slant routes this year. Anything less than 15%, I think would be, I don't know, man. To me, that would be outrageous. You know, that's misappropriation of skills when we're looking at Ricky Pearsall. Get this guy in these short area routes, man. These, again, if anything below 15% this year, I think we riot, man.
Right. Okay. And by the way, though, to point that out, as a rookie, he was at 12% slant route rate. His flat route rate was also a little bit higher than it was last year as well. 9% as a rookie, 6% last year. So the route tree is kind of similar from a deployment perspective as a rookie, but I think the biggest thing was that he wasn't running a lot of these like whip and return routes like he was, or deeper kind of return to the middle of the field routes as he was last as a rookie. I think that needs to change. The one pushback I would say that maybe people would have, and as I mentioned, there's like a part of his game that like is truly, I would say, well below average. And if we're talking about, oh, well, he needs more of these like layup routes, he's just not going to do anything with those routes after the catch, at least based on what we have seen so far. I mean, he was just like, break one tackle, please, Ricky Pearsall. And I say, again, I say this as a fan of Ricky Pearsall's game. I'm a big, big Ricky Pearsall guy. I liked him a lot as a prospect. I liked his rookie film. I liked his film. Like, I'm still very much what you would say is like a Ricky Pearsall, like bull. I'm pretty bullish on him as a player. That being said, I can admit to you, he just offers nothing after the catch. And I mean it, like break one single tackle. He didn't do that in the games charted last season.
Not a one.
What? 2020. No, I mean, and by the way, his plays, percentage of plays in space fell from 41% as a rookie to below 20% this past year. So again, just sort of kind of putting that into perspective of what we're talking about, the opportunities to run after the catch were lower this past year than they were as a rookie, because naturally you're playing more on ball and running this downfield route tree. Your percentage of plays in space are going to come down, right? That's just natural.
Yeah, of course, right.
But the effectiveness was also even lower as well. He went down on first contact 100% of the times when he was in space.
100%.
And by the way, in 2024 as a rookie, he went down on first contact on 85% of those plays. So break one tackle, please.
Break one tackle.
Ricky, please do. And it's crazy because this guy has like a kicker. I believe he has a returner background as a collegiate player. And I think that was part of what they were excited about. So, yeah, I mean, he probably has good instincts, I would say, in space. But just anytime there's somebody around him, at least last year, he was not breaking tackles. He was going down on first contact. Maybe that can change if he's not dealing with the PCL injury for, you know, I don't know, 90% of the football season. That is possible. But yeah, really good hands, good in contested situations, which he was as a prospect. Part of the reason I really liked him and why I do think the Niners trust him on those downfield throws is because he's going to make plays in tight coverage, but he is not making plays after the catch. That is certainly true, which is like the antithesis of a usual Shanahan receiver, because that's something he really values. But they took Ricky Pearce on the first round, and he has not been a after catch threat whatsoever as a pro.
100% tackle rate. That's less than ideal, Matt. That is less than ideal, pal.
I wonder how many. I wonder how many players I've charted ever that have had a 100% dropped in on first contact rate.
I don't know. We'll look into it. Okay. That being said, when I talked to Tim Kawakami, you talked about the PCL. Kawakami rightfully points out Pearsall's injury history. And as a result, the team did bring in Mike Evans. They did bring in Christian Kirk. And then they spent a high draft pick on DeJon Stribling as well. Matt, this is a team and a coach in Kyle Shanahan that we have seen pass guys over before, regardless of draft position. So you and I love Ricky Pearsall. I love his route running and his ability to get open. Obviously not his ability to break tackles, but his ability to get open. I like Ricky Pearsall a lot. I think that he could legitimately have a breakout season here in year number three for him. That being said, I think we'd be doing the people a disservice by not at least acknowledging the fact that he could legitimately get iced out by a coach that has iced out players before, because the team's brought in Mike Evans, Christian Kirk, and drafted DeJon Stribling. So again, that's at least my thought on a downward potential here for Ricky Pearsall. But again, when you kind of look at this situation and look at the coach's history, what are your thoughts there?
When the stakes rise and the lights get bright, that's when you find out who can really swim. Deep Waters is a new UFC podcast from CBS Sports. Every Monday, myself, Dean Thomas, alongside with legends of the sport, Chris Weidman, Jorge Masvidal, and Dustin Poirier, bring you inside the octagon like no one else can. Deep Waters, new episodes every Monday. Watch on YouTube or listen on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get podcasts.
Well, I mean, I think if the Mike Evans signing works out, yeah, he should definitely be the number one. I mean, I think even if Ricky Pearsall is good, and would, I think you'd be insane. I think you'd be categorically insane to not watch Ricky Pearsall play football and say he's good. Like, I think he's clearly good at football. The charting data backs it up. I think statistically he's been productive, whatever. Like, he's a good football player. But is he like a future number one receiver? You know, I think that's open to debate. I think that's open to discussion. So
yeah, I'm talking about the true downside potential here.
Oh, so you're talking about bottoms out.
Completely bottoms out, where Shanny's like, you know what? You're injured too much. I don't trust you. We're sticking in the rookie. DeJon Stribling's getting the run.
Oh, well, by the way, like, that wouldn't be all that surprising. You mentioned based on draft positioning, Ricky Pearsall was taken at the 31st overall pick. DeJon Stribling was taken on the 33rd overall pick. So, like, even draft positioning wise, like, yeah, it's not that big of a to the Niners and how they evaluated these two players, regardless of the consensus board and this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
they view these guys as similar in terms of prospect level and everything like that. And I think that's totally possible. I personally liked Pearsall better than I did Stribling in just relatively. Same. And, you know, you can look that up in the stacked rankings on the site and everything. I definitely valued Pearsall more than Stribling. I think Stribling is a little bit, more of a project, whereas Pearsall was ready to contribute right away. And of course he didn't contribute right away because he got shot as a rookie. Never forget. But anyways, like, yeah, I think that Pearsall is a bit better of a prospect to me, but the way the Niners evaluated, like, that wouldn't be shocking if Pearsall ends up being the third receiver this year. I think it would be a little bit of a stretch if he falls behind Christian Kirk, you know. That would be, I think Kirk is good depth and good insurance for them, and I think will contribute in some ways. But, you know, Kirk pretty much had like one great moment for the Texans last year, which was against the, which by the way was one of the last moments we saw the Texans, because they obliterated the Pittsburgh Steelers, who couldn't really cover anybody in the slot last year, and Christian Kirk went crazy on him. So that was, you know, but Christian Kirk, by the way, held off Jalen Nowell all year as well. So I guess. Well,
I think that's the coaching staff.
I think you're right about that. I just want to, in the spirit of candor, candor here, radical transparency. I wanted to just say that is what happened from a factual standpoint. But yes, no, I think it would be surprising if Pearsall was like the fourth receiver for this team. But there are universes if Stribling is just like way better than. And I say this as someone that likes Stribling, but even way better than I expected, where, yeah, I guess Pearsall could be, you know, the third receiver for this team. But I do think they still really like Pearsall. If you listen to what Shanahan said after the season, he basically did the exact same thing that I did, which is why I feel comfortable doing it. Whereas he's like, well, if you look at the games where Pearsall was actually healthy, like he was really good and productive. So sure. He was still very, like, he didn't feel, at least again, his public comments, he didn't feel any sort of way about like, oh yeah, Pearsall's, you know, been disappointing to us. I don't think they've been disappointed in Pearsall. I think they've been disappointed that the injuries keep popping up.
Matt, can I bring up this point, which is, I think to me, Ricky Pearsall is the biggest question mark in the San Francisco offense, and not because of whether or not he can get open, because obviously he can.
Yeah.
It's just the usage. Where is he going to line up? Because, again, in the first 2 years, we saw him line up a lot as outside X. We've seen him a lot as flanker. I just don't know where he's going to line up this year. Mm-hmm. I truly, honestly don't. You're saying, okay, hey, listen, he's not going to be the number four receiver behind Christian Kirk, but what about if they look at Christian Kirk and say, well, in three receiver sets, this is the better slot receiver is Christian Kirk than Ricky Pearsall? Because, again, Ricky Pearsall has not been playing in the slot for Shanahan's offense. What about if they say, okay, well, look, we want to put him at flanker, but we really like DeJuan Stribling as a flanker, especially in the run game. You hinted at the run game. Hey, listen, if they want to get after the run game, DeJuan Stribling might be a better player in the run game. He certainly, Stribling does, gives you more after the catch, as you have rightfully pointed out. And if that's the Shanahan type, if we're just looking for traits here, man, I look at Ricky Pearsall, and I just see a lot of question marks in terms of, okay, where is he going to line up? What role is he going to play? And how many snaps is he going to play? I just think, given this coaching staff, and I just want to point out that this coaching staff has done this before with numerous players, that I just feel like if we don't at least address that, at least point that out, that I feel like we're kind of sort of like doing a disservice to our listeners. You know what I mean?
I think that's very fair. I think you're right to point out that like there's like a non-0% chance that happens. But I think they have done that with players before who haven't proven anything. And I just think Pearsall has proven more than some of the guys that this has happened to. Like, I don't think there's been players where, oh, they've been good, and then they've fallen out of favor. I guess that kind of happened with Brandon Ayuk after his rookie season. But even then, like, at least the way they talked about it was like, well, yeah, he just ended up playing a lot more than we thought because of injuries and stuff. And then he, you know, wasn't taking things professionally. So we doghoused him. I don't think that's been there any sort of signs like that with Pearsall necessarily so far. Like, I think they were really counting on him to have a big season last year, and then he just got hurt. Like, I think that's how it went for them. So if he can stay healthy, which is a huge if, like, there's just totally a chance that he's just one of these guys that can't handle it. Like, from a you know, body perspective, like, there's been plenty of players before. And that's not even like, I don't say can't handle it like he's soft or anything. It just, stuff happens and maybe it's just bad luck. You know, that's very possible. But I don't, other than that, I think that he's still going to be, like, to some degree, a good, useful player for the San Francisco 49ers, whether he's this, like, 1,000-yard player, breakout guy, future alpha receiver. I don't know about that, but I think he's going to be a good, useful player for the San Francisco 49ers. I'd be surprised if he fell, you know, down to the fourth receiver or anything like that. Can I just say, too, by the way?
Yeah.
These are the players I've charted in reception perception history who've gone down on first contact on 100% of their in-space attempts.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
some of these guys, they didn't have like very many in space attempts. So Marvin Harrison Jr. rookie season on four in space attempts. Yeah, four. Okay. Sick. Four, by the way. Yeah. Great stuff in that role.
Great 100%.
Yeah. Great usage of the fourth overall pick on that one. Yeah, he didn't break a single tackle. DJ Chark in a truncated injury sample in 2021. He went down on first contact 100% of the time. Josh Palmer, great signing. Buffalo, 2024 season, 100%. Adonai Mitchell, talk about another guy. It's like, and I think he's overrated as a separator personally. But like, oh, man, he's just getting open everywhere. Well, he was also breaking tackles nowhere. He's on the list. 2024 season for Adonai Mitchell. Okay. Van Jefferson, 2021. Henry Ruggs. I saw he didn't get out of jail.
Yeah.
2020 season. Marquez Valdes-Scantling, 2021 season. And now Ricky Pearsall, 2025.
Wow.
Now, I do think actually some of the
even late stage Tyler Lockett is embarrassed for Ricky Pearsall.
Correct. Yes. even late stage. Now, by the way, funny one. This guy didn't go down on first contact, 100% of the time, but he's like next in line here is Jahan Dotson. And I kind of think like you could say there's some similarities between like maybe Ricky Pearsall is in the Matt Harmon fell for it again club from a separation standpoint, which I think Jahan Dotson ended up being one of those guys. So, yeah, maybe to your point. Maybe Ricky Pearsall is the next Jahan Dotson.
Oh, boy.
It's possible. I guess, they're pretty similar players. His most common comparable, actually, Ricky Pearsall in the player comparison tool, and I do think this is helpful, is actually late stage Adam Thielen, but like 2019 and 2020 Adam Thielen with the Minnesota Vikings, which I actually think is pretty good, like for him being at that point, he was obviously he wasn't the number one anymore. In 2019, he was the number two to Stephon Diggs. In 2020, he was the number two, to Justin Jefferson. And I actually think like that's probably the best. I'm not talking about Adam Thielen yet, when he was a really, really dominant producer early in his career, but like somewhat in the midpoint of Adam Thielen's career. That's what the tool compares Ricky Pearsall to. And Ricky Pearsall in 2025, he went down on first contact 100% of the time. As I mentioned, Adam Thielen was pretty close to that in 2020. So like a non-tackle breaking, like intermediate area, kind of really strong receiver with good hands. Yeah, that's sort of the kind of bucket we're looking at with Ricky Pearsall.
Also playing more outside than you would like, right? With Thielen, right? Like he should have been playing way more inside all the time. I don't know. Like I said, I'm curious if Ricky Pearsall is their full-time slot receiver. I think that would be pretty good. Will he stay out there in two receiver sets? That will be the critical part in terms of overall counting stat
fair
production.
Point.
You know, so can he get out there? I don't know. But like I said, he can run the full gamut. You know, he could be out there every play. He could be out there every single play on two and three wide receiver sets. He could be their full-time slot receiver. He could be their full-time flanker. I just see there's just so many avenues available for Ricky Pearsall, but there's also the avenue where he just gets iced out too, man. I don't know, brother. Like, I know Shanahan hasn't done a ton with wide receivers, but obviously he's done a ridiculous amount with running backs too. So, I don't know. Like I said, I'm just... I want to believe in Ricky Pearsall. I really, really, really do, because I really like him as a player. I think he's really good. It's just, man, they've made some moves now, the Shanahan 49ers have, where I'm just like, I don't know. I've been burned by this before, dude. I don't know if I want to invest that emotionally into Ricky Pearsall, you know?
Yeah, I get that. I wouldn't say I'm like heavily emotionally invested in Ricky Pearsall, but I just, you know, if you look at the receivers they've drafted, though, like they really haven't iced out a ton of these guys. Like, these are the receivers they've drafted, and we'll say on day one or two. Okay, so I'm not talking about like when they drafted Trent Taylor in the fifth round, but like Dante Pettis, I guess he was a guy that did get iced out eventually in round two. But, and you know what, to your point, that was kind of after he had a little bit of a moment as a rookie. I didn't really think Dante Pettis was all that good, but, you know, that's a separate conversation. Jalen Hurd, which was a weird draft pick in 2019, they took him in round three, and he just never did anything. He was like kind of a gadgety converted player. Debo Samuel, round two, always good. Brandon Ayuk, round one, they did kind of ice him out. Him out a little bit. Danny Gray was a weird pick in round three. They lit that one on fire. And he never did anything for them. Ricky Pearsall, round one, and then Dazon Stribling, round two this past year. So, yeah, kind of, I guess, mixed bag to your point, in terms of guys getting iced out. But my original pushback was, well, it's after they've proven something. Maybe not. Maybe after. I just think that, like, Pearsall, better player.
No, he is.
Than Danny Gray or Dante Pettis. Yeah, I mean, even, obviously. Okay, Pettis, I mean, like in 2018, excuse me, as a rookie, at least had like a little bit of something. I just personally think Pearsall was better. But Pettis, he was 70.2% success rate versus man, actually, that year in 2018. And it just, I thought his prospect profile was not good. But he did have a little bit of a decent rookie year. So I don't know. I guess we'll see about Ricky Pearsall. But I still do like the player. Just not like not a future number one. But I do like this player. And I think I would say he is the favorite to be the second receiver after Mike Evans this year. And I do think that they signed Mike Evans in part to like settle who the outside on ball receiver is in two receiver sets. And pretty much every single receiver set is going to be the X. It's going to be Mike Evans, which I think will free up Ricky Pearsall to do more of the things that he probably should be doing, which is running more layup routes, winning underneath, kind of being that dynamic Z slot type. And then Stribling, I think, is a replacement for Juwan Jennings, who, you know, I think was good, but like a little bit over relied on based on injuries the last few years for the Niners.
Clearly. All right. So there you go. Full on breakdown of Ricky Pearsall. Giving you everything. We give you the upside. We give you the downside. And we give you everything in between in regards to Ricky Pearsall. Go check out the website, receptionperception.com. We got to get out of here. Listen, Matt, enjoy your second vacation.
Thank you.
We'll see you.
It's all the same vacation, technically. But yes,
we'll see you. By the way, things that you have missed: the Knicks won their first championship in 53 years. You missed that.
Shout out. Cool. That was cool.
You also missed the fact that I got a new job. So that's cool. I got a brand new job.
Shoot. Yeah, man. Congratulations. That's sick. I mean, I knew about it. Like, I kind of knew about it before it was official. Yes, the on air congratulations. face to face congratulations.
Yes.
Big listen, in terms of things that matter, we really move the needle for me personally. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the Knicks thing is cool, but you succeeding is much more sick for me personally. So I'm very happy for you, James. Well deserved, and I can't wait to see you absolutely dominate.
Yeah, again, if the listeners don't know, which I would not anticipate they do, I got a new job as the sports talk show host for a local radio station here in Los Angeles. I'll be on every single night. So 4 hours solo show, Matt. That's just nothing but unfiltered takes just happening for 4 hours.
4 hours.
It's amazing.
Well, the listeners of this show know anything. You can stretch out a conversation.
We are both
good at stretching out a conversation, but that's a James Coe specialty. So you'll have no problem, I think, filling 4 hours.
I'm enjoying it already. So week one is in the books there at 97.1 The Fan LA, but we're having a good time. Anyways, we got to get out of here. For Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. We'll see you. But remember, it's never too late to chase your dreams. Peace.